This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Well, it's the fourth and final day of the IBM convention. And the first thing, well, I should say last night, of course, we had the amazing Jonathan show, which was kind of an X-rated show. I'd definitely say an R-rated show. And it was well attended. It was an extra event. It was $5. It was all that it cost. Heck of a deal with the money, all proceeds going towards the Diabetes Foundation that remained here in Grand Rapids. And it was really good. Nick Lewin's lecture, by the way, was outstanding, well attended, did well in sales, which preceded that. The evening show was very good, too. We had the six finalists from the stage contest who were performing. And then after the stage contest were over, we had a show then by the winner from last year, Stuart McDonald, who is going to be heading on to FISM. In fact, I don't even think he's here today. I think he was taken off so he can head over to Busan, South Korea. So we wish him the best. He's a good friend, and he's a very good performer. So good luck, Stuart. So this morning, first thing that we had was the Merlin breakfast, and we have a conversation by, we always have a guest. First of all, the Order of Merlin is an organization for people who have 25 years of consecutive or more of consecutive service or membership within the IBM. And our speaker this morning, we always have someone that's outstanding each year, was Dr. Larry Haas. And he is not only a magician and public speaker, and he is a philosopher and author, but he's also the dean of the Mystery School that is with Jeff McBride's Magic and Mystery School. And so he has a very nice conversation that he shares with us, and he allowed me to record this and to publish this on the podcast here for your listening pleasure. They are some lessons that he had learned from our good friend Eugene Berger. So enjoy.
I first met Eugene about 25 years ago through one of his books, a little brown booklet titled Intimate Power. This book was suggested to me by Bruce Bernstein at Magic Incorporated. Bruce said to me one day, he said, "Larry, no. Don't buy tricks. Buy magic books. And here's one of the best ones of all." And he handed me Eugene's book. And I, you know, took it home with a pile of tricks. And that night before dinner, I read the book. And after dinner, I read the book, pen in hand. Because here was someone saying things of such incredible importance about the art of magic. You already know too many tricks. The task is to take one of the ones you know and make it powerful. This was at a time when I was in Chicago, so very shortly after that, I met Eugene, and we became fast friends. I was a philosophy professor. He had taught philosophy. I taught Asian philosophies. He had taught Asian philosophy, so we had a lot to talk about, and those were remarkable lunches. After that, I started bringing Eugene to my college to perform and teach magic and talk about philosophy. And then before long, he and I started making shows together. And over all the years, Eugene and I have made not some 50, 60 shows together in a whole variety of contexts. We made straight magic shows. We made Halloween shows. We made spirit theater. We made dark seances where all the lights went out. Our final show was in January of 2017. This was what I called the friendship show. The title of the show was Mystery Loves Company. And it was a show about our friendship and the magic of friendship, which we did at the Magic Castle. So Eugene Berger changed my life. And just quickly to finish this acquaintance, in the 2000s, Jeff and Eugene asked me to become a member of the Magic and Mystery, member of the faculty of the Magic and Mystery School and the associate dean. And the Magic and Mystery School was a real place that Eugene loved to be. So from all of our time together, I have culled and distilled for you this morning four big lessons from Eugene. one note, and a final observation. I hope you enjoy these ideas. The first lesson is one of Eugene's most famous metaphors. The house of magic has many rooms. How many of you have heard this expression? All of you, most of you. Eugene first used this metaphor in an article in Genie magazine in July of 1995. And many people know the metaphor. Many of us perhaps use the metaphor. But I encourage you to read this essay again because there's a lot going on in it. The thrust of this essay is it's a call to magicians for fellowship and friendship across differences. It's a call for a deeper appreciation for all the diverse interests among us as magicians. He talks about this room and that room and the dove workers and the rope workers and the card magicians. And here's the room for the historians of magic. And at the end of the piece, this is often forgotten, Eugene asks for a special appreciation for the alcoves in almost every room where the performers of those styles of magic dwell. Special appreciation for them because that only comes through sacrifice. It's a really terrific piece. The House of Magic has many rooms, a call to friendship and fellowship among magicians across our differences. Still an important lesson. The second lesson I would like to direct your attention to is Eugene's deep belief from the beginning of his career to the end of his career that magic points to a larger world beyond the props. Eugene had many different ways of discussing this, but here's just one of them, and I'm quoting, "Magic is about life. Tricks are about the props." This recognition that magic performance can and should point to a world that's beyond the tools that we're holding in our hands is part of his special power as a magician. And I'm going to share with you lines that you will know, a number of his opening lines, each of which will point to something beyond the cards or the cups or the wand or the stuff. "I'm going to send you a thought from my mind to yours. Let's you and I play a game of imagination. Do you believe in spirits? People often wonder, how does magic work? Well, part of the answer is that observation really is very difficult. Here's an old carnival game that was used to swindle people. I believe magic began in dreams. The history of religion told with a pack of cards, chapter 12, the Spanish Inquisition. Always a popular topic. Sometimes things that seem simple aren't so simple after all. Like a spool of yellow cotton thread." Eugene used his performances to talk about human life and friendship and human concerns. And by doing so, he gave his magic great value. And this points us to the third lesson I'm sharing with you, something Eugene talked about endlessly and always to our masterclass students. No one will think your magic has more value than you do or that you give to it. If you don't care enough about your magic to practice and rehearse before you perform, if you don't care enough to craft and use good words when you speak, your audience won't care either. Okay, sorry, but now you have to endure a card trick. Eugene would hear that line used frequently, and he would just shake his beard. "You've just told the audience that your card magic has no value. Was it worth that laugh? And Eugene also had a sub-lesson on that. Not all laughs are good laughs. And part of the art of magic is knowing the difference between the good laughs and the deprecating laughs that injure your reputation and your magic. Lesson 4. Eugene's eternal question for magicians. As far as I can tell, no one ever asked this of magicians before Eugene, but from now until the end of time, we will be asking this, and particularly us as magic teachers. Here's Eugene's eternal question. What do you want your magic to be? What do you want your magic to be? It's your choice to make. There is a choice to make. What do you want your magic to be? Eugene said that if we don't ask ourselves that question and answer it from our own personal point of view, we end up being good little monkeys, continuing to be Don Allen 65 years later, perhaps unwittingly. What do you want your magic to be? What do you want your relationship to magic to be? Now, I'm in a room with the Order of Merlin, and so you all have answered that question, but it's a good question to review as our lives go on, because our relationships to magic do change over time. So those are the 4 lessons. I have a note. In 2009, Eugene was hospitalized for about 10 days from a heart arrhythmia. And after he came out of the hospital, he approached me and asked if I would join him in a secret project. And this secret project was for me to begin working on writing a book, 2 books actually, that would explain all of his unpublished secrets. As I talked about at the lecture the other night, Eugene Berger believed in keeping some of his magic secret. Wonderful, powerful pieces he never explained to anybody. But it was very, very important to Eugene that after he had died, that all of his repertoire, his entire working repertoire, would be in print. So this project started in 2010. We worked on it constantly over the years, and so it was kept secret, so I'm delighted to be able to tell you this morning. There are 2 more big books of Eugene's work that will be released in the next few years. The first book should be out next year, I'm fairly confident, and the second book will be out a couple of years beyond that. If Eugene ever fooled you with something that he didn't explain, and I'm sure he did, it'll all be there. Also, I wanted to mention that after Eugene passed, I was asked by his executors to write a long essay, a celebration of his life and legacy. It's a 5,000-word essay I wrote, part of which was published in Genie and other sources. If you would like to see this in its entirety, I have a notebook at the back of the room. Give me your name and your email address, and when I get home, I'll send you a copy of this essay. And then also, June 1st of 2018 was Eugene Berger Day in the city of Chicago by mayoral proclamation, which was very cool. And I brought copies of that mayoral proclamation for you. Just take one on your way out. You might enjoy seeing what the mayor of Chicago had to say about our friend Eugene. And finally, there are some pins, some buttons at the back of the room. These were given to us to help raise funds for the Eugene Berger Memorial Fund that was created by his executors after he passed away. So if that calls to you, they're $5, someone can help you take that. And on behalf of the magic students and the magicians who will be the beneficiaries of your generosity, I thank you. All of those funds go to help carry Eugene's name and values forward into the future. So that's my note. My final observation. In the last few years, Eugene started talking about what he called a paradox of performing magic. Here it is. the more special you make your audiences feel, the more special they will think you are. Think about that. That's a big one. The more special you make people feel, the more special they will think you are. Eugene would follow that observation up with the recognition that there's a good deal of cruelty in magic. In the subculture of magic, there's cruelty toward each other. But there's also cruelty toward our participants, our spectators who join us on stage. And Eugene invited us all to think about a little less cruelty. He said, we need to recall what David Devant so powerfully said, all done with kindness. All done with kindness. When Eugene died in August of 2017, the worldwide response was staggering. I'm sure many of you saw it. Emails, phone calls, social media exploded with people writing from all over the world, testimonials, tears, videos, performances in his honor. August 9th was an unbelievable day. I believe part of why that happened was because Eugene was so kind. He made all of us feel special. This was perhaps his most remarkable special magic of all. So, if we can all raise a glass, an actual glass or a spiritual glass, to a great teacher, a master performer, and an extremely rare person, our friend, Eugene Berger.
Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you all for having me with you this morning.
All right, well, the Patrick Martin lecture was just over, and I had not seen him perform before, but I'm here right now with Michael Finney, President, International President Michael Finney. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
And also then with Steve Bragazzi. Hi, Steve.
You're doing great, man. Scott.
And so we were just talking about Patrick's lecture. You had just missed that, but it was a friend of yours that you brought in, so tell us about it. You said, I know he had friends with Channing
Pollack. Just very quickly. Yeah, just very quickly. The whole idea in these conventions is people complained about seeing the same people all the time.
Sure.
So I searched out some people that I know nobody had seen. And Patrick, we worked together in the 80s at Magic Island in Houston, mm-hmm. which you're familiar with.
I'm the entertainment director.
And then...
we're just starting up in November again. Did you know that?
Oh, no, I didn't hear about that. That's great. So I met him there, and we just kept as friends. And then a mutual friend of ours, Vito Lupo, I had him come and do a charity event in Woodland, California, where I grew up, to raise funds for the high school athletic department. He brought Patrick, so Patrick and I got... The next day, they take me to the West Coast, somewhere around the Bay Area, and we end up at Channing Pollack's house. And I'm just kind of like a little kid. I'm a fly on the wall. I'm just sitting back. And the three of them sit down and they just start talking about the philosophy of magic, the mindset of people, how people perceive magic. And so, man, to get him to come here and do this lecture and to be so well received, I don't have to say anything more. You saw the people just clamoring. And he doesn't sell a lot of stuff. He doesn't do a lot of lectures. He gave away. A lot like Jonathan did the other night.
Yes.
I said, man, if you was out panning for gold, you walked away with a pocket full of nuggets. And that's really what it was.
Yeah.
And today, the same thing with Patrick. And I couldn't be any happier.
The routines were solid, but also I thought the little tips that he gave in between of saying, you know, about like pinking shears or something, you know, to use for confetti cutting up or whatever and other
these
kinds of things.
These are the little bits and these are the little pieces of gold that mm-hmm. unless you've experienced it, unless you've done it, unless you've had to try to figure out how to make it better, you're not going to go there. But now somebody has saved you the trip. So, he did great.
That was a good lecture.
He did great.
Well, thank you very much. And while I've got you then, I just want to talk to you about your incoming year as president. So, okay.
Good luck with that, Michael.
Because I talked with Bob Patterson. Let's have a seat over here. So I talked with Bob Patterson before about how his year has been, and of course, handing the medal over then to you. And so, what are your plans for the year? Have you got like some sort of an agenda in mind, or what would you like? What direction would you like for the convention?
It's great. I appreciate you asking, and this will get to more people. We'll make the announcement tonight, but this next year I'm kind of slowing down a little bit
as far
with
as
my regular
work,
with
yeah.
what my regular jobs are, and I'm going to give the IBM 100% attention. I'm just not going to be a guy that sits at home and gets to go here and gets to go there and wear this medal and just nah. Lynn Miner, who is based in Michigan here. Mm-hmm. He is helping me put together my IBM lecture tour. I'm going to be endorsed by the IBM. No money is coming from them. Mm-hmm. This is all coming out of my own pocket, so everything is above board and according to Hoyle.
Yep.
And so we're just going to do a lecture tour. I have my truck and my trailer. I'm going to take Lori and the puppies, and we're going to try to see as many rings as we can throughout my year. We're routing them with other jobs that I do have booked so I can make my bills and make my living. Mm-hmm. Anybody knows you're not going to make a fortune off of lectures unless you have a lot of tricks to sell, and I don't. I have advice and I have experience to give away. And so this is it, and Lynn's already getting requests. We have a form we're going to pass out tonight here to some people, but I really, truly hope to be hands-on. As far as the convention next year, I have a great staff, a great crew. My committee chairman, or my convention chairman, is Ken Scott, who's run his own conventions in
Atlanta,
as well as he'll be working with Tom Vogelhoen. Mm-hmm. And I hate his last name, but
because I
never say it the same twice, and then Oscar Munoz, who has a fountain of information for me, and so instead of one person, there's three people working together to cover all of our bases. Mm-hmm. I was using this year a template of how a convention is structured by the IBM.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I was told I didn't have to go by that template.
Good thing you didn't. This has been off the rails in so many ways, in a very good way.
I think so, but I learned a lot this time. I've kept my ears open. People had a little bit of downtime things, issues or something, whereas the dealer's rooms were not open. There's just a little fixes, little hiccups, that have been lingering for many years. Mm-hmm. And we're just going to try to sharpen it, make it better.
Well, you have to for the conventions to continue, certainly, and to get people to come out, because there are fewer and fewer older people who are coming to this.
And
you know?
So with that being said, we're working on an internet person to come in and teach all of us old guys how to use the internet.
And the social media.
And social media.
Yeah.
We have to address this, because another new act I brought in was Chris and Neil. And
they were great.
They've gone over great.
They knocked it out of the park. I think, you know, that was really great. Of course, you know, in the big three, they had Kayla Drescher and then also Steve Valentine, who were both great. And they were doing shows, but these guys were giving a lecture and solid stuff that people needed to know. I mean, it was, of course, they did the show, the library show and birthday thing. But then they were talking about the real stuff, and that is how to set up your website and, you know, some basic information. It was surprising to see people raising their hands who didn't have some of this basic knowledge. And they hit it out of the park.
This was one of the reasons I brought them and told the story of how I met them, because, I've always said there's just 100, if not thousands, of guys out there that are equal to, if not better than, the ones that you hear about every day. And they have a lot to offer.
Mm-hmm.
So I was lucky enough to find Chris and Neil through my experiences and my travels.
Yeah.
I've watched them over the last 3 or 4 years, and their business is just shot through the... And so I said to them, would you come do a lecture? He said, we don't do lectures. We never did any lectures. We've never even been to a convention.
Yeah.
And I said, really? And so you're what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
A lot like Patrick Martin. Doesn't do these things. Nobody's heard of him. And the impact that they make, that gives
yep.
me, that
Larry
makes
Wilson,
me feel really
one,
good.
You know, just hadn't lectured. You
and
know,
and see, Larry's mm-hmm. just this guy. And no, not many people in the magic world have seen Larry. Larry does his own thing. Mm-hmm. That was the idea, is just to bring some new faces in. And next year, I'm so excited about next year, in Phoenix, my own backyard, where I have a lot of hookups, a lot of connections. I can focus all of my energy on the event next year. I'm putting off my Dry Heat Classic for another year.
I was going to say, so, you normally have that at the Talking Stick also, where we're going to be going.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So we're going to just let it go for another year, and I'm just going to go as hard as I can at the convention. It's going to be July 13th, 10th through the 13th at Talking Stick Resort. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go back to some old school ways of making everybody feel as though they're one. I hope to increase the attendance. I hope to make it good for the dealers. We're going to have a dealer show next year, and they're going to be on a timer. Okay. And they have to click the timer when they go on stage. They get to do three tricks or X amount of time.
Yeah.
If they go over, they pay the consequences.
And
that's a cream pie.
And
they won't know where it's coming from. But, we're going to have some fun. We're going to bring back some good fun. The old gags that the old guys used to do when I was coming up. And just be able to laugh at each other and have fun and develop more of a
brotherhood.
That's what
this should be more about.
And a camaraderie.
Part of the problem, I think, with a lot of rings or clubs in general, I think, is that they have too much politics and not enough magic. And people go to the magic clubs in order to have fun, and they're not coming away with fun. They're going away. It's like, oh, man, I don't know if I wanted to do that because,
They go there dreading the idea of having to put up with another personality or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, when I go to the clubs and the rings and when I talk to them, it's going to be, we're all here together. I'm as confused or perplexed about the politics that I stepped into when I did 2 years ago.
Yeah, you probably didn't know what you were coming into, that hornet nest.
But we've weathered the storm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's light at the end of the tunnel. And I hope at the end of this year, people go, great job, Mike. We had a great time with you this year. That's all I want. I want to try to get back as much as I possibly can.
Well, it's great to have an ambassador, certainly like you, and Sean Farquhar, who is touring the world, and you do as well, and so well-known. Same way when we've had Carol Fox or Bev Bergeron, who were professional magicians, because, at the head of a magic fraternity should be, or organization, should be someone who is really going to be experienced professional that you can look up to, and that people, I think, respect you and will hopefully join the organization. I love the idea of going around to the rings with the IBM sponsor kind of thing, because I remember for the SAM 100th anniversary that Mike Amara came around, and he was going to the SAM assemblies, and the idea was for you to join, and if you were a member, you could attend the lecture for free, and if you didn't, then you had to pay your membership or pay whatever to the local assembly or something.
I was with Michael at his house when he was preparing to do that.
I booked that whole tour for him,
I didn't know that, no. I just know that I was there. I saw the bus. I saw everything as it was starting to manifest itself.
Me and Hannah took that, that RV all around.
And so that's where I got the idea with the trailer and trying to do something similar. And since it had been so long, and I didn't know all of the dynamics of what Michael was doing, but we'll extend in our invitation, we'll extend to the clubs, put together a show. If I'm there during your showtime that you're doing it, I'm there. I'm happy to help perform and promote
magic.
That's
great. That's great.
And so there's just a lot of little nuances that we're all on the same page about. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of us see it, but it is trying to talk to the younger kids, see what they're thinking, mm-hmm. and why they don't want to come to meetings, and what can
and
we do
that.
To get them to help us learn, because apparently they're getting everything they need at home. Well, bring some of that to a meeting and see if we can't mm-hmm. meld the two together. So that'll be another issue, another thing to address.
That is another thing, because I believe a lot of young people, or perhaps some people who are new to magic, like performing in front of a camera to post on YouTube, but not for real audiences. They, have,
correct.
And that's one of the things I think that magic does, is bring you out of your introvertedness into being more
it
of an extrovert.
It does help you to
but
present yourself.
But you have to be out in front of people. I mean, otherwise, if you're not, I always say a person who's not performing magic is only fooling himself.
No, you're absolutely right. And you know what it is these young magicians, and they're all talented. They want immediate gratification.
Yeah. Well,
and they think a one-minute bit is going to validate their that, and it's not.
Right.
My big thing is they're not ever going to invent a computer that can be a mentor.
That's a good point.
And so I just know I wouldn't have made it without Jack Sutherland, Oakie Strom, George Sands, Bob Shaw, and then as I got older, they weren't my designated mentors, but they mentored me, and that's Carol Fox, Jay Marshall, and all these guys. Mm-hmm. So that's our job now, is to just go givingly. And if they'll come to us, if they want to come to us and ask us, I'm happy to give them all the information the guys gave me. But now I realize that you have to go out and see them and maybe hopefully do it in person. That's what I'll try to do.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a great year for you, and I wish you nothing but the best. And I know that you'll be going out and spreading the word.
I hope so. And you know what? I want, you know, it may sound cliche or colloquial or I don't know, but I want the love of magic to be our world, and that is SAM, IBM, The Circle. Anybody who wants to be magic has to feel like they're welcome and they're a part of our family, and we're going to get stronger and we're going to get our members back up, and everybody's going to be happy. I think everybody's going to learn. I'm waiting for the new crop of magicians.
So I can sit back and watch them?
Yes.
Yeah.
I want to sit back and watch them like the old guys watched me.
Yeah.
And I would have given anything to have been a bug somewhere just to hear their comments.
Uh-huh.
You know, because I know they weren't all sweet and pleasant, but they were talking about me.
Good point. That is a good point. Now, the last thing I'll ask would be have to do with the how would people contact you or someone within your organization in order to request that we get to see you?
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that because that's really going to help. Lynn Miner is helping me here because he's so heavily involved with the IBM and he has all these access to these things. So Lynn Miner is going to do it. But if you're comfortable, my information is out there. My email is finneygolf, FINNEYGOLF. I know, but you wouldn't know if you didn't know. So it's finneygolf@AOL.com. My office number is right there on my website, and it's accessible through the directory michaelfinney.com.
Okay.
Don't get me confused with the troubleshooter Michael Finney up in San Francisco that might be able to get your washing machine fixed for you. I get so many of his emails, it's kind of funny. And he called me and begged me to have the .com, and I said, no, I'm sorry, I've had that too long. And
same with me, scottwells.com. There's just another Dr. Scott Wells somewhere in Connecticut or someplace.
Uh-huh.
And I get these letters every once, or emails, you know, saying, hey, we were going to stop by this, show this new diagnostic thing or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I think you got the wrong guy.
Uh-huh.
You know, we'll do your show for you, you know.
Hey, Michael, I paid and my car's not working, and they're not going to look at it again, and I can't get to work, and can you come out and help me? I have to write him letters. I have to write all these extra letters to people saying I'm the wrong Michael Finney. He lives in San Francisco. I apologize.
Yeah.
But yeah, michaelfinney.com is the website, finneygolf@AOL.com.
And contact you and we'll try to line up something so that way you can come to their ring.
Yeah, what we'll do is we'll shoot you the information, and we even have a registration form and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So you understand our mission. Our mission letter is on there,
mm-hmm.
and what we're trying to do, and how we can use you, how we can use their help.
Excellent. Thanks, Mike, very much. I appreciate
Scott,
all
what
you've
what
done.
You do is invaluable, man. These pod things, everywhere you go, every day somebody says something positive about it.
Yeah.
So what you're doing means a lot to us as well.
It means a lot to me.
All right, man.
Appreciate
Thank
it,
you.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was International President, Mr. Michael Finney. This is Scotty out. Well, part of the IBM convention is are the contests that we have, not just stage, but close up, and not just for seniors, but also for juniors. And it's important for people to compete in these contests. So this way you can get some feedback from your peers and also some accolades. So whenever you're going to be able to promote yourself to move on to the future. So who I've got with me then today, who's the person who is the contest chairman, as well as a past international president, as well as having one of the very few people who have won the gold cups, Mr. Oscar Munoz.
Hey, guys. So you guys out there?
We're all doing well. Thank you.
Hey, well, look, I can hear it. That was amazing. I was talking to the microphone, and where did that voice come from? Si, senor. Oh, look at that. There is another one.
Well, you were the contest judge.
Yes,
the contest chairman. You and Melody and the family actually.
The family, yes. That's, you get me, you get the whole bunch. I'm sorry. That's the way it goes.
The whole family. That's
yes.
true. And you guys do a great job every year. And one of the things I know that over the last few years that you've been trying to cut back on, which is mandated perhaps by the hotel or the theater, and that is less and less confetti and no fire or smoke. You
really,
explain
yeah, sure. It really depends. It really depends on what the rules that our theater or the hotel gives us.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the hotel is really stickler, we don't want to clean up the confetti because it gets stuck on the air conditioner vents or whatever, then we have to go by what they say. I mean, I would love to people to be able to use fire to accent their whatever props or confetti. But some people figured that if I use a little bit of lighter fluid, what if I use a whole can? That would be really awesome.
Yeah.
You know, or the confetti. If I use a handful of confetti, that's great. But what if I use
a cannon?
Yeah, if I use a cannon and a whole bag of confetti, then in between time to clean that up, because my belief as running the competition is when you got up on stage, that theater was clean for you. So the next guy behind you should also have the same opportunities to have a clean stage and be on an equal level of performing their competition. Because if you walk on stage and you have confetti, and it happened to me in one of my competitions, one of my moves is that I drop, I bounce a ball and it's supposed to come back to me at the same time, release a silk. At the same time, I drop, I palm a billiard ball.
Okay.
Well, the ball hit, confetti came up, hit my hand, and bounced off because it had confetti at the bottom of the ball.
Oh.
So it didn't make such a good presentation of a magic trick. So that's when I decided if I ever ran the competition that we were taught in theater, that you leave the stage cleaner than when you got on stage.
Just like whenever you're camping. They always say, you know, leave your campsite cleaner than where you when you found
it. Right. So we tried, and that's we have to follow the rules, and that's determined by the hotel and by us too, because we don't have the staff to be cleaning, because it's basically myself, Melody, and my daughter. Melody and my daughter are on the back doing the cleanup and putting the stuff up. We don't have anyone. We would like people to volunteer there at the IBM convention. Please, I need help.
Need backstage help.
Yeah, of course. But I totally understand. Some of them, you know, when you ask for help, it goes, I came to the convention. I don't want to, you know. Because, honestly, I've been here for 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
I have not seen a lecture, and I've not seen any of the close-up shows or any of the round robins things that we're having. I have not seen anything other than just working the convention.
Wow.
In fact, today is the first day because I have to tally up the scores, get ready for the awards assembly.
Right.
I just went to the dealer room once.
Wow.
Yeah, and I just bought some silver balls.
Well, somebody's going to be helping you backstage. They're not going to be required necessarily. They're not going to miss the convention.
No.
They're just going to be part of it, like during the contest themselves.
Yeah, that's why we split it up in 2 hours.
Yeah,
because
2 days.
2 days, excuse me.
Yeah.
And basically it's about 2 hours of work. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a preparation, getting everybody's in the row, getting the pictures, getting everything else.
You still have all the other stuff that you're going to be doing. So if somebody wants to help,
we would appreciate the coming over and say, hey.
A lot of times people want to know, well, how can I get involved with the IBM and move on, get on the board? And, you know, well, one thing is kind of helping, I think, in whatever way you can.
Right.
This would be a great way of doing it.
Sure.
Plus, I think for young people to be able to understand stagecraft and get to be backstage.
Exactly. When you have the professionals, you know, they're setting up their stuff and they're going over the lights and sound cues, you learn what they're talking about. Like, for instance, I need a special light here, or I need a special curtain here, or I need these curtains brought in, and you learn the terminology of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a good experience to watch the professionals getting ready, you know, and backstage what you do.
And you can appreciate it from a whole different level when you're backstage.
Oh, definitely, definitely, yeah. I was lucky enough to go see Chris Angel's show, and he invited me backstage for this performance.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I mean, you it looks a whole lot different from the from the front than it looks from the back, but you see a whole lot of people working that show.
Well, it's just like, I guess, not just like, but I was going to say Le Grand David show.
Sure.
Whenever that they had those screens that would come in and out with such beautiful timing and precision.
You know? You have somebody behind those moving those screens, and, you know, because the people who make you good are your, you know, sound and light guys and the backstage guys. Yeah.
That's right. Well, what would you say to someone who is interested in competing, and what do they need to do and provide you, like, for next year's convention?
Okay, for next year, we ask for video, but it's not video so we can critique you and say you're not good or you're not.
It can be a private video. You don't need to post on YouTube for the public.
Yeah,
you just send you.
Send it to me. Yeah. And I'm the only one that watches it, and it's not to qualify or disqualify. It's just so I can know, okay, we have the capabilities of serving this person. Like, for instance, I can also critique and say, hey, man, that's a lot of confetti, and we're not using confetti. Saves you a lot of time than getting there to the convention and go, what do you mean I can't use confetti? You know, because some people don't read the rules. You know, and they get there, and they've been practicing with confetti and fire. And it's like, well, that's my act. You know?
I've seen that, yeah.
Yeah, so, yes. And just a willingness to have a great time. I mean, because most of these people, I've seen some of these kids grow up to be adults.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and still in the art of magic. And it's makes you feel good that the that you see them growing up and they come up and they're like now the stars. You know, now you're looking up at them and you go, wow, I remember when he was running around in diapers with mom and dad, you know. So, yeah, it's a good feeling.
That's very true. Well, speaking of that, then, what is the age cutoff from junior to senior?
To be considered a senior is 17 and below.
17 and above, you mean?
Above, yes, I'm sorry.
Sorry, is 18 above?
18, Scott, it's been 5 days. 18 above.
18 and above for seniors, for and seniors. So 18 and below. So if you were 17 and going on 18, you're
right.
still... Yeah,
right.
If your birthday is going to be next month and you're going to be 18, you're still considered
right,
a junior
exactly.
at 17 right,
right
now.
Right, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now the minimum age is?
There's not really a minimum age.
Well, there's a minimum age to join the IBM.
Right.
Well, I believe.
Of course,
was it 11
yes.
or something or 9? What is our age?
I thought it was 14.
I thought we lowered it a few years ago, but you could be right. I thought we lowered it a while back to 11.
We'll check. I'll get back to you.
Okay. Good question. My point
That's
is,
what I was taught in the military. Sir, I will find out. And I'll get back to you, sir.
Get back to you. Don't say something wrong.
Right.
Well, the idea is, I think, that it's important to get youth involved at an early age then also
I should just, you know, I mean, this is the perfect, you know, those club members that are listening out there, this is the perfect way to sponsor someone. For instance, if your club has some up-and-coming stars, you know, and you get the club involved to help the youngsters get involved, that'd be awesome.
Okay. Oh, Michael Finney, here's the new president, by the way. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate that.
Oh, thanks.
Enjoy it.
Thank you.
I heard it's good in a martini.
Oh.
Ooh, that would be good.
A martini, all right.
Okay, a little
we'll
hot sauce.
Try.
That's right.
But getting back to, no, this is a great way to get the clubs involved. If they have some young guys, or it doesn't have to be young guys. If you have a member in the club that wants to come and compete, and he's 50, 60, whatever, help them up, teach them up, support them, come to and support them, root and
right.
holler for them.
Right.
That'd be great for a club to get involved. And we asked about getting involved. That'd be a great start in the root level. Start from the club. Help some of these kids.
And there are a lot of local conventions. In other words, this is an international scale.
Right.
And we've
right.
had a lot of wonderful Asian acts that have come
right.
over. Julianne Chen had brought some people from the Republic of China and had some other, I think, from Korea, et cetera. So don't be discouraged thinking,
no,
oh,
gosh,
my gosh,
no.
I'm
up. I'll never be like, see, that's the one thing. We have a young kid who competed this year who, when he contacted me, his act was about tap dancing and producing cards. Great. He was original. I've never
so
seen
original.
Him.
Yeah.
So
original.
And he was lovely, and he was an awesome guy to work with.
And that one guy, the other guy was original, took off his shirt to show that
right.
he wasn't.
Right, there's no, yes, Seebach.
Yeah, nothing yeah. up his sleeve.
Yeah,
or,
from Argentina, yeah.
Doing a manipulation act.
Right, right, right. And he, these guys, and Seebach had won our competition when he was 13.
Wow.
And IBM come in first place.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how old you are. It's about having a good time. It's about creating memories with your friends, you know. And if you win, that's the icing on the cake.
That's one of the things Lance Burton had talked about before, trying to encourage people to get involved with competition, because you will
well, you
have
see, you
friends.
See goals. Yeah. Well, getting involved with a competition, you have a deadline, okay?
Not true.
So you go, okay, I got to be at this space this time, and so what? How am I going to get to my goal?
This goal, right.
Right. And so if you got young kids, it's a perfectly way of teaching them, setting goals on this time you should be able to polish that back palming, or you should be able to polish that double lift or whatever by that time. And by the competition, you're sweet. You're ready to go. You're good to go, you know.
I was going to say earlier, though, about competition on a local level. Some people may not want to jump into an international level straight away,
right.
although I would not discourage that.
Right.
But I'm saying that there are other kinds of conventions, like in our case, Oscar, we got the Texas Association of
That's
Magicians.
That's right. That's coming up pretty soon.
Coming up, yep, over Labor Day weekend, coming August 31st through the 3rd of August, or I'm sorry, September. And you can enter contests for that for junior and senior. But the point is that's a regional convention,
sure.
although that we do bring in international talent. It is one of the larger conventions. But there are other smaller conventions, regional conventions, that maybe, let's say, and I don't know whether Abracadabra has contests.
Yes,
know
we
they?
Do.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
There are other kinds of conventions. I know in Indiana now, you know, the NICAN,
yeah,
you
got and MAS, Scott's,
yeah, and all,
yeah,
in Atlanta.
Atlanta, you
yeah.
got you got
They're
all
across
sorts.
The country.
Sure.
And in fact, by the way, I would recommend that if you haven't done this yet, that if you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there is a tab there for convention guide.
Right.
I can click in there. So I'm trying to list a lot of conventions. And if your convention is not listed there, please drop me a note. I'll be sure to
that's,
be glad to promote your convention.
That's a great place to network. Yeah. I mean, and in the local clubs and the local conventions, I mean that's where you get your feedback.
Yeah.
You know, you get you know, and when you're taking feedback and critique, so to speak, you got to learn how to take critique. It's not they're
right.
trying to make you feel bad or
right.
look bad. It's a suggestion,
an improvement,
and it's up to you to suggest. You know
right.
how to get better.
Well, you know, I didn't know whether or not that we were going to, that you weren't supposed to be in a contest. The very first convention I ever attended was the Oklahoma, it was the Cavalcade of Magic.
Oh, yeah.
And it was between Little Rock and Tulsa. We had that back and forth. My very first convention, I thought, well, okay, you're supposed to compete. So I competed and did a linking ring routine and a couple other things. I lost, but I lost to Markham, you know, and which is fine. Ralph Markham's great.
Oh, awesome.
But he and I were competing against each other, and he had a rope routine, and, of course, he was very polished. This is my first convention.
Right.
You know? But the point is, I just jumped right in, and so, I, you know, there's nothing
there's
wrong with that.
There are some people who jump in and, you know, get their feet wet at a national convention, which is great. And also some people who like I did. I went up the convention scale, as I call it, and then I got to the top of the rung when I won the Gold Cups. I kind of fixed my problems. I got to the finals, you know, at the national. But by then I was already polished because I had already made my mistakes in the local areas.
Good point.
You know, and people would feed me,
listen. That's another thing. You need to filter. You can't.
Yeah.
If
it doesn't agree with you, like let's say, oh, you should appear an elephant. I don't have an elephant. You know, it's like, okay. So are you going to go find an elephant? It doesn't fit your character or who you are.
Right.
You just need
it's
who you are. And I don't think people meet in a malicious way. It's just like, you go, oh, okay, that's unique. I wouldn't think about it, but I'll put that in the back of my head in case. But yeah, again, they might say something that really hits you and go, hey, that's a great idea.
Thing in which that you pick this up instead of putting this down at the right moment or something.
Well, it's
you
like
know.
Stuart McDonald's. When Stuart was working on his act and I was getting ready to fizz him, we would talk, we network, we'd talk, and I give him the idea about producing the wine out of the box and rising, and the smoke. It would be nice if the smoke came out and the wine was rising.
That's a great
idea. And sure enough, he has it in his act. So, no, don't be afraid to come out and compete, submit your... Nobody gets to see the video but me, so nobody gets to see anything else. And it's not, again, it's not for qualifying or disqualifying. It's just to see that we make sure that we have what you need to be better.
Right. Oscar, thank you very much.
Thank you, Scott.
You guys
appreciate
do a great
it.
Job, you and Melody.
It's good to see you.
Well, and good luck. And we will be announcing the winners of the contest at tonight's because we had the preliminaries for the 2 days, and then I was a judge, and then we had six people who were put forward for the stage contest.
Right.
Then last night, and then there were another separate group of judges who decided whether or not that there was going to be a good enough competition or good enough contestant to actually get the gold medal, and that hasn't been awarded in a number of years.
Not at all.
I mean, you know, it's not guaranteed you're going to be getting it. You know,
it's not guaranteed, but you know, it's a pleasant surprise when you get it.
It really is.
Not only that, but the gold medal also comes with $5,000, so that makes it even better.
And that's another little incentive, certainly more than just a little incentive.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Anyhow, so yeah, we'll be announcing
the
winners then tonight.
When I won the gold cups, it was at $500.
So you're going to compete again?
Yeah, I need to make up, or maybe retroactive, you know, submit an upgrade. You know?
Oscar 2.0.
Right, exactly.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Oscar Munoz, the contest chairman. This is Scotty out. Thank you, Oscar.
Yeah, my pleasure, man.
We've had just a tremendous lineup, and I've mentioned that many times already throughout the past few days that I've been posting this about the headliners that we've had. And some of these people have not actually performed nor lectured at a magic convention at all, but particularly the IBM convention. Some people didn't even have lectures necessarily or lecture notes in advance, but everybody will do anything for Michael Finney because Michael is just a great guy and a friend to magicians and knows everybody then also. So whenever he asks for favors, I mean, like when he was talking with Larry Wilson, Larry said, whatever, I don't care. You know, he hasn't been at a convention since I don't know when. And anyhow, so he had some lecture notes that he had specially prepared for that. And we got somebody with us then also who is another headliner, Patrick Martin, who was on the cover of the issue of Genie magazine. What was that?
That was in May. A few years back.
Some of you may not be as familiar with his name. That's because he's been one of these working guys and not, you know, attending the conventions and doing a little, you know, penguin lecture or whatever. I mean, he's been in the trenches, but has been extremely successful and doing a lot of corporate work, working with Apple and other, you know, high-profile companies doing that kind of corporate work. Now, when you're doing corporate work, I'll talk to you about your lecture in just a second, which was outstanding, by the way.
Oh,
that the as far as the some of the corporate clients, are you finding that? First of all, do you do many trade shows?
I've done a number of trade shows.
Okay, but do you find that that's kind of fallen a little bit?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Because so many people have done trade shows and they start changing the format.
Right.
So I've noticed less magicians at those. And,
right.
Uh, Yeah, but it still is a great way to grab a crowd, particularly people that are my beginnings were in street. Mm-hmm. So grabbing a crowd and pulling them in was just something you had to learn how to do.
Exactly right.
So it works perfectly for...
And you were working on the streets in front of Ghirardelli, I can't pronounce it.
Ghirardelli Square, yeah, Ghirardelli in San
Francisco.
That's right.
And so that's a big tourist area, first of all.
Yeah.
And they kind of come to you.
They are all gathered around.
Right.
At that time, when I was doing it, they didn't have street performers. They used to kick street performers out because they were trying to be more highfalutin or something.
Okay,
you
gotcha.
Know?
Okay.
So, but then they were noticing the competition at the Cannery. Mm-hmm. And back then, they had Harry Anderson. They had some really great street performers. And so they auditioned a number of performers, and I was lucky enough to win the audition.
And so by auditioning you didn't have to have a permit or anything, I guess? Or
no, they
would do that
they actually hired us, and they actually paid us money to do
so
this.
So you were paid, and then you got
and
tips
then
on top of it.
And then you could open up the hat, and you could still make some money. So it was pretty good living.
I would imagine so. How many years did you do that?
About 5 years.
And then someone from Apple saw you.
Yeah, I got somebody wanted entertainment at Steve Wozniak's home. Mm-hmm. So I got invited to his home. I did some magic there.
Yeah.
They loved the idea of magic in Apple. They were trying to come up with creative ways of marketing Apple. This is very early in the days of Apple. So I came up with a presentation and taught four teams of salespeople mm-hmm. to introduce the Apple III to the market.
Okay.
And we magically produced the Apple III for...
Right. And then beyond that, the same thing like with the coffee company? What was that, Tribeca?
Arabica. They were doing coffee, and I came up with coffee tricks that I just kind of made them up and then just started and went on a tour of a bunch of shopping centers doing selling coffee.
You know, I remember years ago there was a fellow whose name escapes me who played Willy Wonka, and he went like on this Willy Wonka tour doing chocolate, as Willy Wonka, and I want to say he was from California also. Somebody will probably write me and say it was so-and-so. But anyhow, similar kind of thing. And of course, that our friend, who was a Budweiser magician from California also, he had a bunch of... Stan Allen had a write-up on him in Magic Magazine some years ago.
Oh, man.
Oh, it's on the tip of my tongue.
That's
darn
right.
It. But he would go around like to bars and things, I guess, and he would give out these little packet tricks that had Budweiser endorsement on their stickers or the bottle caps or different tricks that he gave out kind
it's
of a thing.
It's a great way of making a statement, getting people to recognize a label or a product and then also giving them something.
Right.
They've learned, we had a great time with Budweiser or whatever the product is.
Right.
Then they have something that they could show their friends and it always has the logo on it. So magic is a wonderful way to kind of, as everyone knows that's listening to this, just to break the ice, get people involved in whatever you're doing.
So. Do you find that you are doing more stand-up or cocktail party strolling?
Oh, stand-up. Yeah, most of my work is stand-up. Most work is on stage.
Because the things that you were talking about in the lecture, I thought were lending themselves more towards a stand-up type of a thing.
Yeah.
You know, in Houston, where I'm working, and then whenever I'm booked around the country, that a lot of times I would probably say that 70% maybe to 80% of mine is more cocktail strolling kinds of shows.
Yeah, that's a great way of doing both. Mm-hmm. With cocktail magic, you could perform as your mind, but often I get a crowd of people around me.
Yeah.
And then it starts to show that, a lot of my magic that is strolling can be expanded to be more visual for a larger group.
And of course, as you know, sometimes that you'll show up and that they wanting something larger than what you thought you were being booked for, so you always got to be prepared.
Always have extra material in your case, so you can go, I could do something after dinner or during dinner. Sometimes they have something that they want in between courses and have like a little act after every special course.
Or those crowds start to get a little bit larger when you're at a cocktail sitting and people are starting to get crowd around you and you really can't stop because you've got a good crowd, so you got to do some more material and keep pulling things out. You can't say thanks a lot and then kind of let them
and
disperse.
Leave. And I'm so sorry, I got to disappear. Yeah, being able to have enough material that can be, that's visual enough and that you can address the audience and as it grows, really an important skill.
One of the tips that I learned that is important, you probably do this as well, and that is that I learned to don't start in the periphery, but you go jump right in the very middle. So this way that whenever you're performing, that the people around you will start turning around saying, hey, come to our table, or, you know, come over here. As a, you know, when I first was starting out, I was kind of easing my way in, and people didn't know, and I kind of worked my way around. But, you know, now I just go right straight for the middle.
Very good advice, because most people don't introduce you, and they don't know that there's a magician at this party. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of make a big splash, where everybody can go, oh, what was that? Why was this center always reacting to something and laughing and clapping and things? And then now you have your own introduction. You just walk around. Oh, come on over here and watch this.
You were sound like you were having fun. What were you doing
over
there?
Yeah, what was going on over there? So now you have an instant in.
When you do that, do you ever then change up your show a little bit? In other words, you've done something for this group and they're having fun. And so what were you doing over there? Do you do a different set, or do you have enough stuff, or is it just the same few things?
No, I have a lot of material, so you can change up and you could do something else over here. When you're doing a cocktail party, you try to zigzag through the crowd.
Right.
So you start, good advice, start in the center. Also find out whoever the host is. Mm-hmm. So that's a great way of introducing yourself to a group. Sometimes people are in conversation, and how do you break a conversation? You look at the person that's talking, and you wait for a moment, you catch their eye, and you smile. They'll stop.
Right.
And then you say, oh, I'm sorry, I don't want to disturb you, but, you know, Bill.
Our host.
I'm a friend of Bill's, and he asked me just to share something with you. And do you have a moment? And then you can go right into your material.
Right.
So it's just, they allow you, and then once they hear other people applauding and things, they know, oh, who is this guy?
Right.
And they'll welcome you into any of the groups.
And that may or may not necessarily be the alpha dog. It's just someone who happens to be controlling the conversation. But after a very short time, you can kind of figure out who's in charge of that group.
Yeah.
And you need to make sure you kind of pandering to them in a way, I guess.
You bring them in, and you make them a hero also, so they feel, oh, yeah, I feel good about you. And then often they will introduce you to other people also.
Well, that's a very good point. Yeah, they'll say, hey, because they were fooled, and they want to see that trick again to see if they can catch you the next time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the host often does that. Uh-huh. And will bring you on and introduce you to their friends.
Right.
So that, and by that time, somebody will bring you around, and immediately you're part of the, you're not just a guest, you're part of the experience.
Right.
And that's why you're hired, is to expand the experience and make everybody feel welcome, mm-hmm. excited, like, oh, this is a great party.
Yeah.
So when they tell the host later on, they're beaming because they're the hero for bringing you in.
You know, in your lecture, it was phenomenal. I thought it was a very good lecture. As I mentioned, I'm not just saying that behind your back, and that's why that Michael brought you over and said, hey, I'm glad he did, because I did want to talk with you. But the other lectures have been very good in their own way, of different, having different kinds of things that have appealed to different people.
Everybody has their own angle.
Exactly right. And their own, where they're coming from and where they want to take this to.
Right.
And there was a fellow sitting behind me said, this was the best lecture of the convention for me.
Oh, wow.
You know, yeah. And he was one of the fellows who's with the IBM. Anyhow, what I liked about it, though, also, were not necessarily just the routines. I mean, your linking ring routine was great, and the thing with the friction pin and some other things you taught. But I thought some of the subtleties you were talking about, or the throwaways, you know, and I say throwaways for an example of the pinking shears or whatever, you know. But it was something that was not garden shears, but you said it was
herb
scissors. And what'd you call them?
Herb shears. They're multi-bladed shears.
Yes.
And it's something that you should always have in your case. Mm-hmm. If you're doing anything where you need to burn an envelope or burn anything.
I use a shredder right now, but I have to plug it in, but I have to bring an extension cord. But
exactly.
I love this idea.
These are, they're herb scissors. You can get them at most high-end kitchenware places or on Amazon.
What are they called, actually?
Herb shears.
But I thought they had a name, you said.
Or multi-bladed scissors.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So office supplies stores have these
might
also.
Have those too. Yeah.
So they're like from 20, cheapest is for $5. They're really inexpensive.
Yeah, right.
Put them in your kit. So whenever fire is not allowed or the smoke might upset guests, you don't have to burn anything. You just take these out and go.
And you make confetti.
It shreds everything up. So now you have a confetti you can toss out in the air and go, Happy New Year.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's the magic word. You said the magic word. And you don't have to upset anyone for,
Very clever.
Fire.
That, among other ideas, one of the things we were talking about, whenever that you had the silk at the fingertips, I was thinking, that looks like Channing Pollock. And then you start talking about Channing.
Yeah.
That was so funny. Because I remember talked with Channing a few times at FISM and some other places, but you had traveled with him. I thought it was interesting, to Magic Hands. I remember the Magic Hand Congress many years ago. They used to have that convention. And you said that Channing didn't have a lecture, and you helped him. You wrote his notes and were working with him. And
somehow he agreed to do a lecture, and he had no idea what a lecture really was, but he just agreed with it.
Yeah.
And then I get this call from him while I was traveling, and he says, What's a lecture? What do I have to do to a lecture? I said, okay, when I come back, we'll get together. So we spent a couple of weeks, and he showed me all this material. And he hadn't done this. He hadn't been on stage for more than 20 years.
Oh, my. Okay.
So this is all kind of slowly trying to pull it back. And, we wrote out all the notes. I illustrated them for him, and then we went to Germany, and we did the Magic Hands lecture.
How did you get to know Channing to begin with?
I met him when I was in charge of doing contests for the New York Magic Symposium.
And it was, I remember that.
It was brought over to San Francisco, and I was in charge of publicity in the contests, and I happened to have his number, and I called him up, said, would you be a judge?
Yeah.
And he said, for what? I don't know if I could do that. Why don't you come over to my house, and we'll talk about it. And so he
Your
made...
house? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, why not? So I went over to his house, and he made this amazing dinner.
Oh, my.
It's like 5-course dinner. Yeah. He loved to cook.
Yeah.
He was out of magic. He was not interested in getting back into magic. But this invitation brought him back into what the interest of... And seeing friends also. And, Irene Larson was there, and a bunch of old friends. Gaetan Bloom, we introduced him for the first time to Gaetan. And he liked it. He liked the community.
So that's what kind of brought him
back. It brought him back.
Even though he wasn't
magic.
Performing in his later years, at least he was kind of part of the fellowship, and he enjoyed the camaraderie of the friends he probably had known but kind of was out of touch with for a while.
Exactly. Yeah. So after that, he lived about an hour away from me, so I could go and visit him quite often.
Outside San Francisco at the time?
He was living in Moss Beach, which is just south, about 40 minutes from, San Francisco. And then we did this lecture tour, and then we were invited to Italy. We did a lecture tour there.
What's one of your best memories you have of him?
Just kind of hanging out. He lived in this beautiful home that was right on the Pacific Ocean, with its own little private beach.
Wow!
And just hanging out, and him
very successful trying, magician. Yeah.
Yeah, and trying new recipes, and him teaching me how to cook. So being around a pot and going, okay, what's in this? And then he would have me taste something, and then I'd have to tell him what all the ingredients were.
So was it Italian cooking, or what kind did he specialize in? Everything.
He said housewife cooking.
Okay.
So he had like 7 basic dinners that he would put together, and for every day of the week he would have a new multi-course dinner, and they were always delicious.
Wow. Interesting. So from here, after you've done this convention now, are you planning on doing another one?
Yeah, I would love to.
It's not so bad, is it?
I enjoyed it. You know, I hadn't done lectures, and I'm seeing a lot of friends here that are doing lectures.
Like Gene Anderson and everybody.
Yeah. And I realized, wow, like, this is fun.
Yeah.
And I love meeting other magicians and getting into and seeing people. That's one thing about magic is that you meet someone and you're friends for life.
That's true. That's true. And also what I like is that when we see each other sometimes at conventions just annually, like for this convention, some other people, I might go to other conventions, but they don't attend those. The point is that you pick up a conversation just where you left off, and it's like, you know, you're still friends. It's not like you're having to get reacquainted again.
Exactly.
If anything at all, it's like, what's happened this past year? Oh, I was on this cruise, or I traveled to Europe. You know, there's something interesting to talk about then, too. You know, magicians are fascinating people.
They are, and most magicians are very kind. Mm-hmm. Also, I found that out.
Yeah.
That they're
and
just
hospitable.
Nice. They're nice people.
Come over, stay at the house. Whatever.
You can go anywhere in the world.
And you
meet a magician, and they invite you to their home. They take you out to dinner. And, you have that relationship that's, I think, unique amongst other variety artists. Because I've talked with jugglers and to other performers, and they don't have that sense of community that magicians have. It's very, very special.
That's a good point. Well, Patrick, again, enjoyed the lecture. Thanks very much. Good seeing you then again. Because it was years you'd worked at the Magic Island back in Houston.
Exactly.
So
that was fun.
How long ago was that? That had to be in the 80s, I'm
guessing. That was in the 80s. That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, we're reopening the Magic Island.
I just heard that. Michael told me that.
Yep. We're opening November the 15th, and they just designated me as the entertainment director. So I'm going to be the guy.
Well, I'd love to be
come back again.
I would love to. That would be fun.
Well, Patrick, it's a pleasure. Good seeing you. And so for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Patrick Martin. This is Scotty out. One of the things I think is always interesting at these conventions are the people who are here for the very first time and are getting to experience something that they will always remember, because I'm sure that each of you who are listening to the podcast will remember your first convention. I certainly remember mine. And experiencing this, it's kind of hard to put into words until you actually come to a convention for the first time. And so I want to introduce to you the fellow who is actually my roommate here this week. And he is a first-time attendee at an IBM convention, Mr. Robert Purcell. Hi, Robert.
Hello.
And so tell me, you're from?
I'm in Livonia, Michigan.
Which is not too far from Grand Rapids.
Yeah, about a two-hour drive.
Did you know June Horowitz or not? I assume you didn't. No. Since you hadn't been to a convention, you've probably seen – you've been a member of the IBM for a while.
No, I'm kind of a new member just this year.
Okay. So you didn't see her picture on the cover when she was president and everything back – because she was 104 years old. You know, yeah. It was wonderful. It's too bad that she didn't just hang on for another couple of weeks to make it for this convention. Right. That was sad. But this is your first convention, so I wanted to talk to you about your experience. So what did you think?
Yeah, it's being my first, I didn't really know what to expect.
Sure.
But the surprising part, one of the surprising parts for me was that everyone is friendly. I mean, that sounds bad.
But what, you weren't expecting us to be friendly? What's up with us?
Yeah. But no, just so many people just chatting and just greeting, you know, everybody just sharing. It's been great.
Yeah, who are some of the talent and everybody? I mean, it's kind of like they're very accessible and they're so easy to talk to.
You know, I've been side by side with Lance Burton, I think, four times, and you know, chatting.
Yeah,
I just came up from the Amazing Jonathan was there, which you know I remember from my childhood watching videos, and here I was talk with him for about half an hour.
Yeah,
you know, it's kind of unreal, but at the same time. It's like, oh, we're all the same, and we're all just enjoying this.
Yep, the Brotherhood of Magicians, which is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what has been the most outstanding thing to you? I mean, we're winding down here on the last day. What's been a memorable thing that you're going to remember to take home?
There's a lot.
Name them all.
which was very recent, we're talking more about... I guess it was basically, you know, putting yourself out there, risking, you know, exposing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
like Larry Wilson was talking about.
From what he was talking about, which is, you know, challenging. It's difficult. It's uncomfortable, but it's also what I've been looking for. You know, change in your life to kind of, you know, take that step, take that chance. To do something, because I don't perform. It's been a an interest, a hobby for me since I was eight, you know, on and off. But I want to you know, perform, even maybe just, you know, one night here and there in a restaurant would be great, you know. But
yeah.
Taking that step, you know, what he said, you know, is like he was speaking to me, you know, what I needed to hear. It was great.
Yeah, you know, each of the lectures, I think, brought something different, and everyone experienced it on a different level. I just had a conversation then with Patrick Martin, who was talking about that very thing. I thought his lecture was outstanding, but I thought Larry's was – everybody's was really good in their own way, and they affected people on different levels as to what they were speaking to your soul, basically. And Larry had something that was different than any lecture I've ever seen, but then again, he doesn't lecture very often. I mean, very often, I think this is the second lecture he's ever had, you know. And,
right.
And did you see the Amazing Jonathan show last night, too? I'm sure you did. I know you did.
Yeah. Everybody was – the whole room was laughing the whole time. One of the guys at my table is like, my face is hurting. I've never laughed as much, you know, in years.
Well, it was so funny because, you know, I have seen his show in Las Vegas, and this was his Vegas show, basically, which was interesting because, like with the Texas Association of Magicians, we have in our contract no blue material. In other words, no R-rated type. And that's all this was. And so
but
I mean, it was definitely an adult kind of a thing. And it was billed as that. And so, in other words, when you came in, you knew that it was going to be some adult material and there was going to be some blue language, et cetera. But you know going into it what to expect. And if you didn't want to, you know, be experiencing that kind of thing, you didn't have to attend. And it was an extra event, extra charge event for that. But also his lecture I thought was kind of interesting. And that was his first lecture, too. What did you think of that?
Yeah, that you talk about different. That was different.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, different. I was saying, you know, after that, he made a lot of wives angry at him. Without knowing it yet. Cut that out. That's gross. Stop doing it. But again, you know, just kind of demonstrating, you know, just, you know, he's enjoying stuff. It's like, right. you know, silly and gross tricks to do at a dinner table, you know, right. is just, you know, fun being a kid.
Yeah, that's a very good way of putting it. It's like being a kid. Yeah, yeah. It was just kind of silly and gross. And so are you planning on coming back to a future convention?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. I don't know about next year yet. I've been thinking about it.
Well, you should register while the prices are good.
Yeah, I know. And you know, I'm tempted.
They're not going to get any cheaper than what they are right now here at right. the convention. And it's going to be, by the way, those of you who are listening, it's going to be in Scottsdale, Arizona. You may have heard Michael Finney talk about that earlier, and that's going to be over at the Talking Stick Casino. And it's an Indian casino, and it's there. Just Scottsdale is a suburb of Phoenix, so you're going to be flying into Phoenix and going over there. We had our convention there a few years back, and it was really good. I remember Todd Robbins and some of the other guys who were featured entertainers there, and it was an outstanding convention as well. Plus, I love Phoenix. I've got relatives there also, so I go to visit from time to time. But I think that Phoenix is going to be a good location. Even though it is summer, it's a dry heat, as Michael says, which is his tagline. But he has a lot of friends I know that he will bring in, and it will be outstanding, just like this one has been outstanding as well. Now, have you attended any other conventions, Robert, outside of the IBM? In other words, have you been to, like, the Magi Fest or
no.
anything in Ohio? No, this is it. Your first convention.
Yes, my first magic convention ever, mm-hmm. which is kind of sad. I mean, you know, being in Michigan, you know, I had the colon get-together. I've never been.
Are you going to go to that now?
Yeah, I've been wanting to for a while.
And so what about this year? You get to register?
Oh, for the one this year?
Yeah. It's just coming up in August. It's not that far away.
Yeah, I should do that.
You should. It's always a great convention. It's a lot of fun. I tell you what, that is unlike this or any other convention because it is called the Abbott's Get Together, and it is really more of a picnic, you know. And when you talk about this being a bunch of friends, you will meet a lot of friends there also. They've only got like one stoplight in the whole town. I mean, whenever the people come in, the town swells to at least double the population, you know. And it is just a ton of fun, and there are so many different things you can't imagine. You know, the shows are in the high school gymnasium. The dealers are set up in the junior high gymnasium, and they have things going on at the bars. They have a cemetery tour, which is interesting because they've got, you know, Blackstone and others who are buried out there.
Yeah, I heard about that, yeah.
So, see, you got to go.
Yeah.
It's just down the road from where you are.
Right, yeah. Yeah, there's actually so much in the one in Ohio, the Magi Fest.
Yes, that is awesome. Juan Tamariz is going to be coming up. Magi Fest is always a great convention. Josh does a great job with that convention. Mm-hmm. And that's nearby. You need to attend that. And once you start going to those, like, you'll start branching out, and maybe you'll come to Scottsdale then next year.
Yeah. And that goes along with, you know, what I was saying before, you know, taking that step, you know, whatever it is, taking action. Not that I'm going to attend every convention that is ever going on. I'm not you, right? I don't go to all of them.
Not yet.
But yeah, something. I'm glad I'm here. I know people said, even Michael Finney had said, you know, this is kind of a different year, a different mm-hmm. convention. So I don't know. Maybe, you know, I'm thinking, well, the next one's not going to be quite like this. Maybe I'll be disappointed. I'm sure I won't be disappointed.
It'll just be different.
In ways, yeah.
Yeah. Just like, you know, Beluga Caviar is different from. A high-priced champagne, you know, it's all just a little bit different, but it's all really good.
I'll take your word for that.
Yeah.
It's too fancy for me.
You will enjoy it. So anyhow, I appreciate it. Thanks, Robert. I'm glad you enjoy the convention. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, sure. Thanks.
And so for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Robert Purcell. This is Scotty Allen.
Well, I turned my head. Turned back and you had your recorder out. I'm just saying, you're so dedicated to it. I'm amazed.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Let me say that I thought your show was very good.
Thank you.
You're one of the big three events, yes. And you're a big person.
Like
what,
physically?
What I mean, no. Oh. What I mean is, as far as big in our industry, that you're well known, doing very good. Because I don't think there are many women who are at your level within our art, and there should be more. You know, I was talking with Carissa Hendricks recently.
Right, yes, I heard that episode,
yep.
Yes.
And that was a good one, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, very.
I love her, and I like what she was saying as far as I have to believe that within this generation we're going to be seeing more equal men and women, you know, in our art.
Yeah, I think when you, speaking of Carissa's podcast, is that I know you heard Stan's speech, mm-hmm. and in Stan's speech he mentions that there's a magician that came to him and said that she doesn't feel comfortable doing a lot of things.
Right.
That was me.
Oh, it was? Okay.
It was. So, like, it was just a really, I think that between Carissa and I, we are being more outspoken and encouraging people to be outspoken mm-hmm. about things in the industry, but I look forward to a day when this isn't a topic of conversation anymore, and exactly we can just call everybody magicians equally, and we don't have to worry about it.
Right, right. And so I like your approach to magic.
Thank you.
Because I like martinis.
And I like,
it's always helpful.
The show's just for you. Everybody else just sort of sees it, but really right. It's for Scott Will.
It's just for me. Oh, wait, thank you.
You're welcome. That.
And so because you were really a bartender at one
time.
Yes,
I was,
so,
yeah. Okay.
And so you live in L.A., and yes. So, and you also work at W.C. Fields Bar from time to time. And now you've been up for the award against Doc Eason and some other people from time to time.
Yeah, I've been up for the award if the award existed. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the Magic Castle bartender, it actually doesn't exist. So it existed a long time ago, and the only person who kept winning it was Doc Eason.
Yeah.
So they just canceled the award altogether. So that was before my time. So there isn't actually – there's a parlor magician, close-up magician, stage magician, lecturer. There is mm-hmm. not a W.C. Fields Bar magician award.
That's interesting.
So I make up in my script, I say that I was awarded this award, and it doesn't exist. It's not a real thing.
It's not a real thing anymore. It sounds good.
Yeah, it does. That's good. Everyone believes
it. What is your future? What do you see for yourself in the next
few
years?
Like, later today, I'm probably going to have some ice cream, and then
I'd love that.
And then tomorrow I go home.
Are you going to have chocolate?
Always.
Butterscotch, or what is your
it's
favorite
always
topping?
Always chocolate.
And do you like cashews, or do you like peanuts? Or, I mean, pecans. Which are the three?
I'm not a fan of crunchy ice cream.
Really?
I tend to just like a nice, smooth chocolate gelato.
So you don't like the little flecks of rainbow things, you know, sprinkles?
I wouldn't say no to a rainbow sprinkle, but I tend to just go with like a nice – I also eat vegan, so –
you're not big on cashews or anything.
No, but a good cashew ice cream is fantastic.
Okay. Like how about pistachio ice cream?
Oh, I do. I like the flavor of
Froyo?
Pistachio.
You like Froyo?
Oh, sure. Yeah, okay. Of course.
It's got to be good for you. So you're a vegan.
I do my best. Yeah, I do my best. And when traveling, it's a little bit different because right now in Grand Rapids, Michigan – there isn't that.
No, we eat meat here.
We found that out.
I'm like, I'm one of the people. I'm a peach from Grand Rapids. No, I'm from Texas. I eat barbecue.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
I'm a meat eater.
Yes. Well, I was just in Houston performing, and I did a
you
Google
were.
Search.
Yeah. I didn't get your call.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know where I am sometimes.
So you're doing a lot of corporate events?
So I'm now in this touring show. It's called Champions of Magic. It's sort of like The Illusionists, but more fun. And I hope everyone heard that. It's a little bit of a joke, but also not. And it's the same cast, so there's no rotating cast. It's just five performers.
Yeah.
And one's a double act, and it's the same cast every single show. Mm-hmm. So you get to see we have a good camaraderie with everybody, and it's really fun. You can tell everybody really likes each other. We have a good time doing the show, and we're constantly improving it, not just our own individual acts, but the show as a whole. So I've been a part of that since last November, and that seems to be, right now at least, my foreseeable future. I absolutely love doing it, and I look forward to doing it.
Where were you in Houston when you were performing? Do you remember?
The Hobby Center.
Okay, it's downtown. Yeah,
because
I know that they were, the Illusionists were in Jones Hall.
Yeah.
The Hobby Center's like a block away from over
there. Yeah, it's not
I'm
far.
Just 2 miles from there. I could have walked
there.
No way! Yes.
Why didn't we grab martinis?
Because you didn't call? I didn't know you were in town?
Because I don't know where I was half
typically,
the time.
I know everything that's going on in Houston. People contact me and say, what's happening magic-wise? And I overlooked that, and I apologize.
That's
so
fine.
When you come back through next time.
That'd be great.
Okay.
I'd love that.
So until next time.
Until next time.
That was Kayla Drescher.
Hi.
This is Scotty L. Here we are wrapping up on the Saturday night show, and on the... on the final evening over here, everything has gone great. It's a wonderful show hosted by the incomparable Larry Wilson. And, you know, it was interesting. I know all of you were kind of disappointed yesterday because it was a Larry Wilson Friday Wilson podcast yesterday. We had him on Wednesday and Thursday.
It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking.
I had to come back to kind of, you know, round out the...
Scott, you're only human. Of course.
Of course. So I had to return to the well. And so anyhow, good show. You emceed a good show then this evening. It was very good. Had Niels Dunker as the as a juggler, which is always good, a variety act. He was fantastic. You know, he's a Guinness World Book record.
Seven Guinness Book World Records.
Kyle and Misty Knight did a great little illusion show as well. And opening with Michael Trix just rocked it, you know.
Really did.
Raw magic. And we really got things started. And it was
did
great.
A good
high
job,
energy.
Man.
It
did really a good job.
And who am I forgetting? We had, of course, Jeff McBride.
Jeff McBride and Nick DeFott.
It was very funny. Nick was very funny. Yes. So, question that I had for you that came up yesterday, and I said, well, I'm going to have to ask Laurie about that. And this goes back to one of the shows I remember seeing you in, because you were saying in your lecture today about someone telling you that they saw someone doing your act. I saw you.
Oh, yeah.
Said, no, it wasn't you. It was somebody actually doing your act. But,
right.
Okay.
There are so many different parts of your act that are very funny and different, your lines and things. But there was something, and I remember back from the 70s, and you tell me which show this was, where that you were using the thought transmitter, which you used the other night, you know, with the egg beater kind of a thing. And I think that was like on Judy Carter's. Were you on a show with Judy Carter?
I sure was. First special for Showtime Cable.
Yeah.
It's probably 1979.
That would have been about right.
Yeah, at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco. This is a classic example. This is a show I produced.
Okay.
I just didn't know it.
Okay. Yeah. What?
Well, I was just a brash upstart. I was trying to make work for myself.
Yeah.
So I saw something on Showtime Cable. So I looked up who produced the show. I called those people up and said, I have a great idea that I want to pitch you for a show. And they said, oh, great. They set up a meeting. These in the days, nobody knew who the hell I was. Didn't matter. I showed up. I said, I've got this great idea. I said, what about a show that's all comedy magic?
Yeah.
And they said, well, is there such a thing? I said, you're looking at it, baby. It's, you know, they said, well, yeah, we saw some video on you. You're very funny. But, like, is there, seriously, I mean, we can't do a special just on you. And, of course, my reaction is, why not? And
Their
thing is, why not? Because it's not how we operate. We want to have a variety number of acts.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, what's that about? And they said, well, that way if they're watching and they don't like you that much, they know that in a few minutes there'll be something else, you know? And I said, oh, man, all right, fine. So I said, I'll tell you, here's a great show. Here's a great show for you. I said, you have Judy Carter. She's hilarious, original, funny, comedy magic, just like you would not expect in any way, really coming out of left field. I said, suddenly I've gone completely blank on who it was. Oh, Martin Lewis.
Martin Lewis, yeah.
Martin Lewis, I said, he's this British guy, very dry wit, very underplayed, very funny.
He's part of that left-handed league with you.
That's, well, not with me. I wasn't in left-handed league.
Well,
but
I saw you on the poster.
No, you thought you did.
Okay, there was somebody. Okay.
Harry Anderson and all.
I know Harry was on there, and Michael Caveney.
And all his people, but no, I was not a member of the Left-Handed League.
Okay.
So, all these guys, but I said, you know, Martin is very different from Judy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have me doing my comedy illusions, which nobody in the world is doing, and still isn't. There's no one doing comedy illusions.
No.
Right? And so they said, oh. And they said, can you get us tape? And all these people said, sure. So I have no idea. I'm producing the show. I didn't realize that's what a producer does.
I
got those together. I put it together. They said, you know what? These are really good, but we're going to go out and look at other acts. So they went out and looked at hundreds of other acts, and they decided on Judy Carter, Martin Lewis, and me.
Same ones you suggested.
Right.
Yeah.
Then we go to shoot at the... I think it was a union thing to get around the unions is what I think it was. They didn't want to dare shoot in L.A. or they're afraid they'd be shut down. So they go to shoot in San Francisco, and they do it like this is a live show and we just happen to be filming it or something. He got me. I don't know how. So at the last second, and this is typical, some genius on the production team says, I saw a great act in the Magic Castle, Glenn Falkenstein. Mm-hmm. Now, you know I love Glenn Falkenstein.
Not funny, though.
Not supposed to be.
Right, exactly.
Right? So great. Deadly serious. That's the whole idea. I'm showing you serious spook stuff. I'm showing you like paranormal activity. I mean, that's what's so great about it, right? And I just said, I don't get it. I thought it was supposed to be comedy magic. You go, yeah, it is. And I just thought, you know what, Larry? Don't get involved in this. If these people are dumb enough to think they should suddenly throw in a serious mentalism act, there's no way to explain to him. It was the phenomenon that you see of people who know nothing about magic getting exposed just a little bit to good magic, and they see somebody who's good and they think, this is the greatest act in the world. You know what? I can show you 100 acts you've never heard of who are incredible, who will blow your mind, but you don't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've never had any ice cream before, you taste chocolate and vanilla, and they're like the most incredible flavors you've ever... Then I give you, you know...
Rocky Road.
Rocky Road, and whoa!
All these others, that you're going to be having all kinds of experiences, certainly.
And pralines and cream and all this other stuff. And you're, you're in for something really spectacular.
Right, right.
You know? So, and then I can't remember, they edited the show or they did some crazy-ass stuff. I don't remember. But the show was called An Evening of Comedy and Magic. Mm-hmm. And had they edited out Martin Lewis and left me and my troupe, Judy Carter, and Falkenstein.
Right.
Doesn't make any sense to me.
No,
but,
no, but I remember that.
You know, I got paid, so...
Well, there you go.
Right, that's funny. All I'm thinking.
Well, you learned a lot. Right, learned a lesson there, too.
And, you know, I got paid some pittance, mm-hmm. and the producer of that show, I remember, bought himself a new turbocharged Mercedes after that show. And I'm thinking, oh, so that's... What I did is what a producer does. I thought, I can do that.
You do more of that.
That's right.
But going back to the thought transmitter.
Oh, yes.
That was something that you had developed. Where did you get the idea for that?
It got me. It seems like I must have seen it. I must have read about it. I honestly don't know.
I wondered about that because when I saw it, then I've been doing a little bit of research. And I understand actually there's something written up in Gene Anderson's book called The Book, which I believe is Clayton Rawson in Hugard's Greater Magic book, I believe, from 1947. And then there was another article in the Linking Ring. Yeah.
I mean, entirely possible.
Yeah.
You
so
know.
I know you do a lot of research and everything, and so that's just, that was what your lecture was about today, talking about how that you steal an act by getting someone's idea of something and then putting another routine into it. So
right. Yeah. Or it can be anything. You can, I'll give you, I wonder if this is going to work on the radio without a visual. I think it will. I saw Max Maven lecture once. It was fantastic. He did a great lecture. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about how people sometimes think magic is just something that fools you, mm-hmm. and how obviously incorrect those. And he was very serious, of course, and very scholarly and very well-researched, did all this thing. But when I saw it, it just started filling my head with jokes, mm-hmm. because that's the way, that's the lens that I'm looking through. Mm-hmm. You know... you know, there's a guy, this guy named Baba Ram Das, who used to be Richard Alpert in the 60s with Timothy Leary dropping acid at Harvard.
I've heard that name, okay.
Right, Richard Alpert was an esteemed psychiatrist at Harvard, like did a bunch of LSD with Timothy Leary,
yeah.
went to India and decided to become a holy man, and he did. And he wrote a bunch of really cool stuff, and one of his books he talks about how we all are seeing things through different lenses, mm-hmm. that are special to us, you know? And he said, if you're in fashion, you walk down the street saying, oh, there's a jacket from Berghoff Goodman, and oh, there's a Barney's, a pants, oh, this is a hat that was from wherever, you know?
Yeah, okay.
But he said, it's not like one lens is truer than another or one lens is better. You can, he said, you can shift through them. You can, you know?
Like a kaleidoscope.
Right, and that's what I'm... The lens I'm looking through, I see stuff that's funny sometimes.
Yeah.
So I saw this very serious lecture from Max Maven, and to me it was really funny. And so I put together a thing where I'd get the audience to shout out the words that they associate with magic, and they all, of course, suggested something that fools you. Mm-hmm. And then I told a story that I won't tell her because it's slightly off color, mm-hmm. but it's so weird and so circuitous, and you... Seems almost like a Shaggy Dog story. You think, where's he going with this?
Okay.
And by the time I get to the punchline, which is slightly off color, but you think, what is he talking about?
And kind of like the story of, the family. Every comedian has a different take on the story that they try.
Oh,
to,
the aristocrats.
The aristocrats.
Yeah,
right. Okay,
sure.
So that kind of a circuitous
right.
Shaggy Dog story.
And so by the time I get to the end of it, I am talking about... all right, I'll have to tell you.
Okay.
And you edit this out if you don't mind. I said to the audience, I said, did you see this thing in the paper last week that this guy who had a heart attack in a disco? And like everyone's, what? I said, yeah. And here's what's so weird. You know, if you have a heart attack and the EMTs come get, they rush you to the hospital, and the first thing they do there is they remove any restrictive clothing you have on. Mm-hmm. This guy was in like this swinging dance club. Mm-hmm. He's wearing... Super tight pants. They cut his pants away, and taped to the inside of his leg is a salami.
Okay.
I said, now, the only reason I bring this up here tonight is because this is something that might fool you. But that doesn't make it magic. Right? Right? Well,
okay.
The whole point is Max Maven wouldn't tell that joke.
Yeah.
Because I didn't take Max's material. I just took what Max was saying, filtered it through me, and it came out looking totally different.
Yeah.
That's what I really think. And that's why that quote from Pablo Picasso is, talent borrows and genius steals.
Yeah.
That, you know, if you're putting all these restrictions, oh, I'm going to do this, but not this, but that's not the way real wild creation happens. You have to be unfettered, mm-hmm. and then let it come through you and be so idiosyncratic that, I mean, and that's why sometimes you see stuff where if you take a moment to deconstruct it, you sort of go, oh, my God, that's so-and-so. That's from this.
Right.
Yeah, but once it's filtered through this other stuff, impossible to see, you know.
Well, we could go on, and we have, and I appreciate the last few days and getting some, like, little snippets of wisdom over here that you've been dropping, these little gems. Has been great, and we could spend more time, but I'm just running out of time. I wish we had more, because, there's only a limited amount of time, on the podcast.
Some of your listeners may feel bad if they don't hear Larry Wilson every time.
That's right, and for those who didn't hear you yesterday, as I said, on a Friday Wilson Free, or Wilson Friday, I can't say it properly.
I can't figure out what it is either.
Yeah.
Wilson Free Friday?
Wilson Free Friday, okay. Thank you. That's what I'm trying to
Wilson
say.
Wilson Free Friday.
That's what we had yesterday, unfortunately. Yeah. So though, we get a little bit makeup here today.
Good.
I'm glad we did. So thank you, Larry.
Good.
Appreciate it. Always good.
Pleasure, Scott.
So, the Magic Word Podcast. That was Larry Wilson, Scotty L. Well, as we are in the evening farewell party, which is in the main ballroom over here where most of the activities take place, having a little cocktail reception and everything, and of course they said the awards have been given out for close-up and for stage. The big announcement, of course, which you were waiting for, is whether or not that there was a gold medal and or a gold cups that have been awarded, and the answer is kind of. Not gold cups, but we did have a gold medal. First place and the People's Choice, all three went to Zhuzhu and Rinran from the Republic of China. And they had a fantastic act that covered the whole stage. Beautiful young ladies with a lot of fan productions. Apparently, they've only been doing magic for about a year. But again, with the support of the Chinese government and some people that they had backstage and all the props it was huge stage production and certainly deserved everything that they got. And again, they were awarded the gold medal, I think the first time in like 10 years. So that was really great. And then first place, of course, and when we have People's Choice, what they do after the evening contest there last night is everyone was to put their tickets into one of the six boxes that they felt like was their favorite of the acts. And they were the ones who won. Award of Merit, which most of us call second place, but it's called Award of Merit, went to Seebach, who was the interesting act I believe we talked about earlier as well, which is the young man from Argentina who had removed his shirt to show that he had nothing up his sleeves or in his chest or in his pockets or anything, and he was doing a manipulation act, very entertaining. And then for the youth, first place with Red Star, and then the Award of Merit went to Luna. And they were both outstanding acts also. Boy, it was hard to determine which one be first and second in that one. Luna was the one that was kind of like a fairy or a little pixie, and she had such graceful movements. And Red Star was just the opposite. He was very energetic and a lot of fun and danced around the stage and had a lot of magical effects took place, as did they both, but very good. And also then the Phantasma Award went to Theo Chatra, who is, I believe, from Oregon, or I believe from Washington State. Young man who did a Rubik's Cube performance, talking act. Very good, very entertaining. And so he is the one from the United States who is going to go to New York and at the expense of Phantasma and get to visit with some guys, get some lessons, and hang out up there. Now let's talk about close-up. Close-up adult. First prize went to Eric Tate. Award of Merit went to Chong Huang. I know I'm butcher that name. Sorry. People's Choice and the OB4F People's Choice, which means that they get a he gets a registration for the 4F convention, went to Chris Quinero. So congratulations to all of the winners, and also congratulations to all the organizers and the people who put this all together. The hotel was outstanding. The lineup, I tell you, Michael McFinney had put together just a stellar lineup of talent. So it's been fantastic. And the whole convention went well. The contest, the lectures, Everything else was, as I said, just nothing short of one of the best conventions that the IBM has had in years. So really, that's just kind of a wrap. We've had just a little bit longer podcast here this evening. Today, I guess, for this fourth day, longer than usual. One yesterday was just a little bit shorter. It was only about 52 minutes long. This is well over an hour, so kind of making up over from yesterday. So I hope that you hung with us, and thanks very much for coming along on this ride. It's been fantastic. And so from Grand Rapids, Michigan, and the International Brotherhood of Magicians Annual Convention, for the Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty out. We'll be right back.